a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Guan Xing, the headlines we're tracking at this hour. Boom potential, China to expedite law safeguarding the private economy, says top legislator during the session. Strategy as stated in the government work report. The Standing Committee of the National People's Congress, or NPC, delivered its work report at the second session of the 14th NPC. And Zhao Leji, chairman of the NPC Standing Committee, said that solid progress has been made in building a modern socialist country in all respects. And Zhao also stressed that China will speed up the revision of laws to protect the private economy. Our Zhu Zhu has more.
The second session of the 14th National People's Congress held its second plenary session today. The Standing Committee of the National People's Congress has outlined its plans for 2024, focusing on bolstering democratic systems and making changes to laws related to representatives, supervision, and oversight. Additionally, there's an emphasis on speeding up reforms and creating new laws to support rural economic organizations and private businesses. Amendments are also proposed for laws concerning mineral resources, bankruptcy, and unfair competition. Of particular interest is the revision of laws supporting private enterprises. The central government has already issued several documents aimed at promoting private sector growth, and various judicial bodies and ministries have introduced measures to protect and support private businesses and entrepreneurs. However, private enterprises currently still lack dedicated legislation for their promotion and protection. The private economy contributes over half of China's tax revenue, over 60% of its GDP, and over 70% of the country's technological innovation achievements. So in this legislation, these measures would be sorted out and fixed in legal form to provide protection and support for private businesses.
Chinese Premier Li Qiang has emphasized the importance of advancing rural revitalization in this year's government work report. To strengthen the agricultural sector, Premier Li highlighted three key aspects: ensuring stable production and supply of grain and other major agricultural products, consolidating the achievements of poverty alleviation, and steadily advancing rural reform and development. Premier Li suggested that local governments should learn from the successful experiences of the Zhejiang program and adopt region-specific approaches to continuously make progress and achieve anticipated outcomes in each stage of rural vitalization. And China's central authorities have recently released their first policy statement of the year, emphasizing the promotion of agricultural modernization. To gain further insights into the new trends for upgrading agriculture in 2024, our reporter Zhu Zhu spoke to Jeff Rowe, CEO of Syngenta Group. Take a listen.
Some of the trends that I'm paying attention to are things like biological adoption. Biologicals represent a next round of innovation for farmers in China and around the world. We're looking at things like soil health and policies that can be brought forward to help farmers improve soil health, as well as rehabilitate their land.
This is also your first time visiting China as Syngenta Group CEO, right?
Correct.
What are your new findings on investing in China's agriculture market?
Obviously, China is one of the most important markets for us to invest in globally. We have a long history of investing in China. We're going to continue that. I'm very focused on the opportunities for us to grow in the Chinese market, to continue to bring kind of the global innovation that Syngenta has. You've got the benefit of having all of this global experience come to China and accelerate the innovation curve in China, which is very important to Chinese farmers and the Chinese society. Beyond that, we're thinking about our pipeline and how we can bring new innovation through our pipeline that helps with emissions. So helps farmers reduce their emissions. Maybe helps them reduce the amount of fertilizer that they use. Maybe it helps reduce the amount of irrigation required on a farm. So there's a lot of ways that we can bring our own innovation, our long history of working with farmers to help on this important topic.
So digitalization is one of the keywords that you mentioned. So I guess maybe that's a crucial trend for 2024. What are some other agricultural development trends do you vision for 2024?
Well, I think sustainability, innovation, certainly important. Another topic that is very much on people's minds is artificial intelligence and how artificial intelligence relates to agriculture. And so for us, that's kind of a two-pronged approach. We think about it from a perspective of the farmer customer. How do we use things like artificial intelligence and machine learning to interact more effectively with our customers? But we also think about it even probably more so in how do we improve our innovation cycle. So our innovation cycle is quite long. It takes at least a decade and hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to bring new products to farmers. Using artificial intelligence, machine learning, data analytics, we're able to accelerate that cycle, which is really important because we are fighting against diseases and pests that are out in the environment. We've been able to use different analytical tools to be able to analyze how this improves soil health. These are things that we couldn't have done 10 years ago, and it's all enabled by data, analytics, and really smart scientists.
Whether it's about your education, the home you live in, or the items you buy, your money has a story to tell, because every business story is a human story. Global Business.
And China will advance integrated urban-rural development and coordinated regional development, according to a government work report submitted on Tuesday. And now for more insights on this, we're joined in the studio by Liu Xueming, a senior economist of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio today. So let's start with your observation of China's two sessions. As an expert in the agriculture field, what policy signals do you observe regarding China's agriculture development?
Thank you. We observed in the government report two important themes are there, as always, the rural development and food security.
Yes.
In particular for the rural security, for the food security, we observed a lot of the new initiatives. Among them, we noticed that there's so-called the big agriculture, the big food, which is a very new, first time we noticed the government report. And in the rural revitalization, we also noticed something new about this Qianwanchun, which roughly translated as a rural green revital program, which originated from Zhejiang proper EU program covered that before. So that's something very interesting. And we feel that in the future, in the government of future work, the priority list for agriculture, those two things are very interesting to follow. We will see something new happening in China in this respect.
Oh, those are very great points. And let's start with the first one about a big agriculture or the all-encompassing view or approach to agriculture and food. What's the significance of this new inclusion in the government work report?
Well, it is interesting in a way when we're talking about food. Originally and traditionally, we talk about the grain directly consumed, like paddy, rice, like wheat, this kind of stuff. But now for agriculture, the food system is much larger. In a way, we're talking about diversified the sources of the food. For example, we can have what we call the marine culture, the ocean farming, which can generate a lot nutritious food, including aquatic plants like seaweeds, and then a lot of fishes, which are, you know, the delicacy and nutrition stuff for the people. And also, you know, regarding the food sources for forestry, we know forestry, non-timber forestry products are many. So, for example, we can have mushrooms, we have vegetables, we can also doing, you know, some chicken farming, free-range them in under the forestry. So, and it's very interesting to diversify the sources of food, considering the fact that, you know, the land area, the farmland area in China, given its large population is limited, we need to diversify the sources of food. And in a way, in terms of the demand, the people want something new and nutritious and exotic property. That's the way I think it's very interesting to diversify the food sources. And in terms of sort of broad, what's called the broad food category, and in terms of its definitions or something, I think it's very much related to what FAO proposed, we call the sustainable food system. That's including the whole value chain, not doing the original food itself, but to upgrade its value chain. For example, if you do beef production, you do not sell the cattle alive. You do the more, you do the slaughtering, you do the food processing, and then eventually you do bring it to the table. You may do the hot pot, you may do the steak. So during the whole value chain development, the food, its category could be increased in terms of the value provided, nutrition values, and also in terms of income for farmers. You benefit a lot.
A lot of added value in that process. And Dr. Liu, I'd also like to talk about the Zhejiang program, which is also highlighting its experiences to promote similar development across the country. How would you suggest to make some region-specific policies?
With Zhejiang experience, they have their unique conditions, their cultural background. And Zhejiang, we know, is a very developed area in China. And I think their experience in doing the rural revitalization, green revitalization, more or less we're talking more about improvement of the rural environment, rural ecosystem restoration. So in terms of the rural environment improvement, firstly, people have to feed themselves. Right? Once you got yourself properly fed and clothed, you want to improve your environment, that's for sure. And for Zhejiang's experience, you do through people's mobilization, people's participation. You have the demands from people, the local people want to improve their living conditions, of course. Mm-hmm. And not only the rural people, but the city people as well. You know, when we're talking about nostalgia, idyllic lifestyle, everybody wants it. And you know, the way they are doing it is based on their local conditions, their economic development, their people's participation. And indeed, it's a very useful and, you know, this kind of experience can be, I think it's already been recognized by United Nations, by UNEP. You know, they've been awarded numerous awards. And I think domestically, a lot of people, they went there. They really learn on the site. That's the way that really the country, the rural beautification process should go, and particularly in terms of rural revitalization part, improving people's livelihood. That's the way they should go. And I think they have a lot of potential to learn. But again, it is a Zhejiang specific experience. The people from Northwest China may be different in terms of production, in terms of environment, that's different. They have to base their local conditions. No, you do not have fish and ponds, of course. They have their lost plateau in Northwest. They have unique products that improve their life, their environment in their own ways.
Right. Well, China is such a big country. And last but not least, the government work report also touched on the importance of talent in speeding up China's rural development. How would you suggest to further tap into the potential of young professionals?
Well, again, talking about rural revitalization or even food security, the people, the talents are most important. You know, the people driving the development process. In a way, if you want to get the modern agriculture, get rural revitalization, you need the new technologies, you need the innovations, you need what's so-called new quality productive forces. In a way, who will do that? It's the young people who are dynamic, who can learn. And we already see a trend, the young people going back to do some very new undertaking for agriculture, for example, the e-commerce, and also the protected agriculture, the new rights introduction, the mechanization, the protected agriculture, as I mentioned before, and the drawings there to doing the pesticides, to doing the pest control, to doing the fertilization. Those things we need people to do. How to get people involved in that? First of all, let them have something to do. You know, exciting. They can professionally reward, and also they get their rewards. Indeed, there's a monetary return. They get their income. And then the overall, the public general social services should provide it to those young people. So they see, I have a future doing what I'm liking to do, what I want to do. in the countryside, I have a future. I have a sense of settlement, of fulfillment, and in future I can do it. That's my lifetime endeavor. So that's the way I see in the rural area. They must get the young people involved, and in return, the young people there, they see the future, they'll stay there, and they will really to bring the changes to rural areas in China.
Indeed, we believe China's agricultural modernization will provide a lot of opportunities for young professionals. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much, Guanxin, for having me. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Liu Xiaoming, a senior economist from the FAO for us. And earlier today, several ministerial-level officials provided insights on the government's objectives in many sectors. Take a listen.
We should strive to enhance the capability of industrial, scientific, and technological innovation and give play to the main role of enterprises. Deepening integration of scientific and technological innovation draws major concerns. Therefore, we must continue to promote the construction of a national manufacturing innovation center.
We'll continue to intensify supervision and law enforcement against administrative monopolies. In response to unfair competition practices in many places, such as restricting trading and companies from participating in bidding, we'll step up regulatory and law enforcement efforts to respond to business entities' concerns.
To give full play to the role of the market and develop the silver economy, we should encourage private investment in the elderly care service industry to meet the multi-level and diversified demand.
The phrase new quality productive forces is gaining traction in China's economic development. The term has been mentioned quite a lot of times in this year's government work report. Essentially, it stands for the high-tech innovation and advanced productivity. Our reporter Wang Tianyu spoke to MPC deputy Wang Shuxing, who is also the president of Chongqing University, on the role the new quality productive forces play in education sector.
Well, they are actually about advancing education, technology, and talents together. Specifically, we should take technological innovation as a guide, ensure a high-quality education system as a guarantee, and take the cultivation of talent as the fundamental elements. In this way, we can establish a virtuous cycle of education, technology, and talent.
How can we cultivate talent in this field?
In terms of the cultivation of talent, I think we still have room to develop. We should know how to cultivate top innovative talents, especially those who can turn disruptive and original ideas to results. This is what we as a research university should consider to do. It can be done through developing our top-ranking subjects and advantage subjects, so to lead up the improvements of all of our subjects. Then we can gradually form the entire high-quality education system of universities.
A recent poll conducted by CGTN and Renmin University of China reveals that 83.5% of respondents appreciate China's independent and peaceful diplomatic approach. The survey included over 31,000 participants from countries such as the United States, Germany, France, Mexico, Thailand, and Nigeria. Additionally, more than 90% of respondents highly praised the Belt and Road Initiative for its global benefits. Regarding major country diplomacy, 92% believe that China-U.S. relations are not a zero-sum game and that trying to change and contain each other is unrealistic. Furthermore, 83% urge the U.S. to rationally assess China's development. And now we're heading for short breaks. Still to come on the program. Resurgent demand. Home purchases are on the rise in Hong Kong after the SAR government scrapped restrictive measures during the city's budget released a week ago.
The National People's Congress, China's top legislature, and the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, the country's advisory body, convene their annual sessions in Beijing. Lawmakers and advisors will assess the country's performance, craft laws, and refine policies that will chart a course of China's ongoing modernization drive. Beijing once again hosts the two sessions, where China takes stock of what it has achieved and where it's headed next. Join us as we bring you highlights and analysis of China's agenda in our special coverage of the two sessions here on CGTN.
Home buying in Hong Kong is on a rise after the lifting of tightening measures announced during the city's budget release a week ago. And there has been an increase in activity in both the second-hand as well as new home markets. As Patrick Falk reports, developers and buyers appear to be capitalizing on the changes aimed at boosting the real estate sector.
With its seaside surroundings and lush green mountain views, it's easy to see why Hong Kong's south side is one of the city's most desirable areas to live. It boasts some of the highest-end properties Hong Kong has to offer. At this development on the tip of the coastal market town of Stanley, workers are putting the final touches to the latest luxury project that's about to come onto the property market.
My best guess is that they have been waiting, right? And, you know, it's a smart move, it's a smart strategy, right? Because the market environment should be more favorable now.
Last week, the Hong Kong government took major steps to restore vigor to the housing market by removing all additional levies on home buying imposed a decade ago, designed at the time to cool red-hot demand. That includes the scrapping of combined stamp duty of 15% for non-residents when purchasing property and extra duties on owners who sold within 2 years of buying a home.
Now that it's all been taken away, that pent-up demand, we see it driving additional transactions, and we think over the next 12 months, the number of monthly transactions is probably going to be closer to 5K.
Property platform Spacious says it's seen a 57% increase in sales inquiries in the days since the new measures were announced. It follows a nine-month-long losing streak for the real estate industry. And the government's home price index fell by 23% in January from a peak set in September 2021.
Here at Henderson Land's Belgravia Place project in Kowloon, all 138 units on offer were snapped up by buyers within 4 hours of going up for sale last Sunday. And in an indication of an immediate pickup in the market, the units were 31 times oversubscribed.
Still, analysts say the medium-term outlook for property in Hong Kong could be challenging. High interest rates in particular are likely to put a cap on any sector recovery for the foreseeable future. But any boost to the industry will have a positive effect on the economy and can also help lift Hong Kong's struggling equities market.
So, of course, there are a lot of factors that affect the stock market, including investor confidence, external factors. We think the budget, if it stimulates the economy, should have a positive impact on the stock market in the long run. I'm hoping that the shape of recovery is sustainable. We're not looking for a short-term rebound, but we're looking for sustainable growth in the Hong Kong economy.
Hong Kong's property sector accounts for 8.5% of its GDP, and if the momentum in sales continues, it puts the city in a firmer position to get economic growth back on track. Patrick Falk, CGTN, Hong Kong.
China's foreign trade performance in the first 2 months of the year surpassed the market expectations. Exports surged by 7.1%, imports grew by 3.5% in dollar terms compared to the previous year. And this was in contrast to a Reuters poll that had projected that China's exports would increase by 1.9% in dollar terms, while imports would grow by 1.5% compared to the same period last year. During this period, ASEAN remained China's largest trade partner, accounting for 15% of total trade volume. Chinese private enterprises contributed over half of the country's trade volume, with a remarkable growth rate of around 18%. Exports witnessed a growth rate of over 10%, with electromechanical products comprising nearly 60% of total exports. And now for more discussions on China's economic growth and foreign trade data, we're joined by Wang Yaojing, Assistant Professor of Economics at Peking University. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor Wang. And could you provide more details on factors contributing to the strength of the January to February foreign trade figures and the implications for the economic outlook?
Well, thank you for having me. So besides what you said about the largest exporting category, which is the equipment and electronic devices, we have noticed that other high-growing categories would include, say, vehicles and integrated circuits. And China has played very strong strategic importance on automobile industry, and they continue to grow at a very high speed of 15.8% in the beginning of 2024. And besides the types of product, I hear that you also mentioned the diversity of our trade partners. ASEAN countries are China's number one trade partners in 2024, and China is experiencing a 9% high-speed growth in the trade with the BRI countries. These signal resilience of China's foreign trade, as diversity is showing, one, that China is more connected to the world, and two, they're also the key to face uncertainties and risks from international geopolitical tensions.
In a current economic context, how do you perceive the government's growth target of around 5%?
Well, although it is the same target as last year, this year's 5% number is very ambitious, as the base year level is higher now. So this year's 5% growth means more substantial growth compared to last year. And there are a few considerations to this number. First of all, this helps stabilize market expectations. So we've been talking about an L-shaped transition, and having a constant growth rate signal not just for this year's growth, but also maybe a long-term growth expectations. And in fact, the 5% long-term growth rate is a reasonable number, as in economics, the estimation is that every 1 percentage point of growth equals to around 2 million urban jobs. So for the coming 10 years or so, we are expecting about 10 million college graduates each year. So a 5% growth rate is a good anchor point from the job market perspective.
That will do for this edition of Global Business on CGTN. I'm Guan Xing Beijing. Thank you for being with us. Stay tuned.